Chapter 92. Looking, with horror in his eyes, upon the murderer's face. You monster! The man stopped halfway, and they looked at each other, but Sykes' eyes sunk gradually to the ground. Witness you three, cried the boy, shaking his clenched fist, and becoming more and more excited as he spoke. Witness you three, I'm not afraid of him. If they come here after him, I'll give him up. I will. I tell you out at once. He may kill me for it if he likes, or if he dares, but if I am here I'll give him up. I'd give him up, if he was to be boiled alive. Murder. Help. If there's the pluck of a man among you three, you'll help me. Murder. Help. Down with him. Pouring out these cries, and accompanying them with violent gesticulation, the boy actually threw himself, single-handed, upon the strong man, and in the intensity of his energy, and the suddenness of his surprise, brought him heavily to the ground. The three spectators seemed quite stupefied. They offered no interference, and the boy and man rolled on the ground together. The former, heedless of the blows that showered upon him, wrenching his hands tighter and tighter in the garments about the murderer's breast, and never ceasing to call for help with all his might. The contest, however, was too unequal to last long. Sykes had him down, and his knee was on his throat, when Crackett pulled him back with a look of alarm, and pointed to the window. There were lights gleaming below, voices in loud and earnest conversation, the tramp of hurried footsteps endless they seemed in number crossing the nearest wooden bridge. One man on horseback seemed to be among the crowd, for there was the noise of hoofs rattling on the uneven pavement. The gleam of lights increased, the footsteps came more thickly and noisily on. Then came a loud knocking at the door, and then a hoarse murmur from such a multitude of angry voices as would have made the boldest quail. Help! Shrieked the boy in a voice that rent the air. He's here. Break down the door. In the king's name, cried the voices without, and the hoarse cry arose again, but louder. Break down the door. Screamed the boy. I tell you they'll never open it. Run straight to the room where the light is. Break down the door. Strokes, thick and heavy, rattled upon the door and lower window shutters as he ceased to speak, and a loud huzzah burst from the crowd, giving the listener, for the first time, some adequate idea of its immense extent. Open the door of some place, where I can lock this screeching hell babe, cried Sykes fiercely, running to and fro, and dragging the boy now, as easily as if he were an empty sack. That door. Quick. He flung him in, bolted it, and turned the key. Is the downstairs door fast? Double locked and chained, replied Crackett, who, with the other two men, still remained quite helpless and bewildered. The panels, are they strong? Lined with sheet iron. And the windows too? Yes, and the windows. Damn you. Cried the desperate ruffian, throwing up the sash and menacing the crowd. Do your worst. I'll cheat you yet. Of all the terrific yells that ever fell on mortal ears, none could exceed the cry of the infuriated throng. Some shouted to those who were nearest to set the house on fire, others roared to the officers to shoot him dead. Among them all, none showed such fury as the man on horseback, who, throwing himself out of the saddle, and bursting through the crowd, as if he were parting water, cried, beneath the window, in a voice that rose above all others, 20 guineas to the man who brings a ladder. The nearest voices took up the cry, and hundreds echoed it. Some called for ladders, some for sledgehammers, some ran with torches to and fro, as if to seek them, and still came back and roared again. Some spent their breath in impotent curses and execrations. Some pressed forward with the ecstasy of madmen, and thus impeded the progress of those below. Some among the boldest attempted to climb up by the water spout and crevices in the wall, and all waved to and fro, in the darkness beneath, like a field of corn moved by an angry wind, and joined from time to time in one loud furious roar. The tide, apostrophe cried the murderer, as he staggered back into the room, and shut the faces out, the tide was in as I came up. Give me a rope, a long rope. They're all in front. I may drop into the folly ditch, and clear off that way. Give me a rope, or I shall do three more murders and kill myself. The panic-stricken men pointed to where such articles were kept. The murderer, hastily selecting the longest and strongest cord, hurried up to the housetop. All the window in the rear of the house had been long ago bricked up, except one small trap in the room, where the boy was locked, and that was too small even for the passage of his body. But, from this aperture, he had never ceased to call on those without, to guard the back, and thus, when the murderer emerged at last on the housetop by the door in the roof, a loud shout proclaimed the fact to those in front, who immediately began to pour round, pressing upon each other in an unbroken stream. He planted a board, which he had carried up with him for the purpose, so firmly against the door, that it must be matter of great difficulty to open it from the inside, and creeping over the tiles, looked over the low parapet. The water was out, and the ditch a bed of mud. The crowd had been hushed during these few moments, watching his motions and doubtful of his purpose, but the instant they perceived it, and knew it was defeated, they raised a cry of triumphant execration to which all their previous shouting had been whispers. Again and again it rose. Those who were at too great a distance to know its meaning, took up the sound. It echoed and re-echoed. It seemed as though the whole city had poured its population out to curse him. On pressed the people from the front on, in a strong struggling current of angry faces, with here and there a glaring torch to lighten them up, and show them out in all their wrath and passion. The houses on the opposite side of the ditch had been entered by the mob. Sashes were thrown up, or torn bodily out. There were tiers and tiers of faces in every window, cluster upon cluster of people clinging to every housetop. Each little bridge, and there were three in sight, bent beneath the weight of the crowd upon it. Still the current poured on to find some nook or hole from which to vent their shouts, and only for an instant see the wretch. They have him now, apostrophe cried a man on the nearest bridge. Hurrah! Apostrophe, the crowd grew light with uncovered heads, and again the shout uprose. I will give £50, apostrophe cried an old gentleman from the same quarter, to the man who takes him alive. I will remain here, till he come to ask me for it. Apostrophe, there was another roar. At this moment the word was passed among the crowd, that the door was forced at last, and that he who had first called for the ladder had mounted into the room. The stream abruptly turned, as this intelligence ran from mouth to mouth. And the people at the windows, seeing those upon the bridges pouring back, quitted their stations, and running into the street, joined the concourse, that now thronged pell-mell to the spot they had left. Each man crushing and striving with his neighbor, and all panting with impatience, to get near the door, and look upon the criminal as the officers brought him out. The cries and shrieks of those who were pressed almost to suffocation, or trampled down and trodden underfoot in the confusion, were dreadful. The narrow ways were completely blocked up, and at this time, between the rush of some to regain the space in front of the house, and the unavailing struggles of others to extricate themselves from the mass, the immediate attention was distracted from the murderer, although the universal eagerness for his capture was, if possible, increased. The man had shrunk down, thoroughly quelled by the ferocity of the crowd, and the impossibility of escape, but seeing this sudden change with no less rapidity than it had occurred, he sprang upon his feet, determined to make one last effort for his life, by dropping into the ditch, and, at the risk of being stifled, endeavoring to creep away in the darkness and confusion. Roused in Unu strength and energy, and stimulated by the noise within the house which announced that an entrance had really been effected, he set his foot against the stack of chimneys, fastened one end of the rope tightly and firmly round it, and with the other made a strong running noose by the aid of his hands and teeth almost in a second. He could let himself down by the cord too within a less distance of the ground than his own height, and had his knife ready in his hand, to cut it then and drop. At the very instant when he brought the loop over his head previous to slipping it beneath his armpits, and when the old gentleman before mentioned, who had clung so tight to the railing of the bridge as to resist the force of the crowd and retain his position, earnestly warned those about him that the man was about to lower himself down at that very instant, the murderer, looking behind him on the roof, threw his arms above his head and uttered a yell of terror. The eyes again! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he cried in an unearthly screech. Staggering as if struck by lightning, he lost his balance and tumbled over the parapet. The noose was on his neck. It ran up with his weight, tight as a bowstring, and swift as the arrow it speeds. He fell for 5 and 30 feet. There was a sudden jerk, a terrific convulsion of the limbs, and there he hung, with the open knife clenched in his stiffening hand. The old chimney quivered with the shock, but stood it bravely. The murderer swung lifeless against the wall, and the boy, thrusting aside the dangling body which obscured his view, called to the people to come and take him out, for God's sake. A dog, which had lain concealed till now, ran backwards and forwards on the parapet with a dismal howl, and collecting himself for a spring, jumped for the dead man's shoulders. Missing his aim, he fell into the ditch, turning completely over as he went, and striking his head against a stone, dashed out his brains. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.